Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talent, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone. Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Salbona. In Senegal, Langadek. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, Palestine, and Saudi Arabia. Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all. Join us live on the on-air radio network. Call 727-731-5192. We want to talk to you.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif. Join me and my co-host Kareem Hamid every Wednesday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the Female Solution Radio Show as we explore that relationship that is the foundation for our society, the relationship between men and women, husbands and wives. Join our discussion as we seek to repair broken family ties and rebuild our community. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to our hosts. Or you can join us live on Facebook at www.facebook.com/the-female-solution.
Grand Rising. And thank you all for joining us on this Wednesday edition of the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and we're going to be joined by our co-host, Kareem Hamid, and our
and
American
most
Muslim 360
most
family.
Redeemer. I've been with you,
and
there is no
so
God save Allah alone, and that there's nothing worthy of worship or praise.
To bring you a global message today. Because, as always, we are talking to the world, and we are bringing the world to you. Well, one of the things that we have often talked about is our history as people of African descent. But there are many people of African descent who may have come over in different ways. There's a very large immigrant population, a recent immigrant population from Africa that is experiencing a whole new set of challenges. And as well as taking advantage of the opportunities, they're also addressing issues that are unique to those who immigrate to America and seek to establish new roots. So today we're going to take a look at how we unite in the diaspora. And we've got a special guest with us today, Fasika Alim of the United African Organization joins us to discuss the upcoming 2024 Africa Summit and Resource Fair this Saturday, May 18th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the University Church at 5655 South University Avenue in Chicago. And we're excited because we get to learn a little bit more about our brothers and sisters who may have just arrived here or been here for a few generations, but certainly are facing the challenges of bringing that slice of home and relocating and reestablishing a whole new community. So let us welcome to our show my dear sister, Fasika Alim. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Female Solution Global Radio TV show.
I'm happy to be here. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes, well, I'm excited to have this upcoming event because I think for many of us, especially those who may have been in America for a long time, we're not sensitive to the needs of our immigrant brothers and sisters who are dealing with some of the challenges of coming with a language, of trying to navigate this system, and for the most part, trying to find your community here abroad. So we're going to talk about some of these things and also perhaps some of the misunderstandings that many who have been long-time residents in the United States may have about the recent immigrant African population. So we're grateful that you have joined us today, and we're going to see if we can bring in our co-host, Kareem Hamid, and our American Muslim 360 family. And Kareem, are you with us?
Yes, and I'm grateful to be here this morning and to welcome our honored host, praise be to Almighty God, Sister Fasika Alim. The event, as far as I understand it now, that will be held is connecting the diaspora, the African Summit, and resource directory. You know, in whether we realize it or not, we share similar circumstances, common history and similar circumstances, and we can share with each other our strengths, our good qualities, and learn from each other, too. Also, you know, there's much we can learn from the inhabitants of the continent of Africa, and we are definitely willing to share our gifts with those that travel to this country. And we welcome you with open arms. Whether we realize it or not, you are my sister, and I am your brother, and distance
Absolutely.
And time cannot separate that. No.
Absolutely.
So I'm quite sure that should be a very rewarding event held at the African Summit. From what I wrote down here, it says African Summit, a resource directory, a resource.
Uh-huh.
So we are
yes.
resources. Yes.
Well, I've got a question.
If we're willing.
I don't know how, and of course, Kareem is there in St. Louis, and I know here in Chicago we have a very large African population. We have a large Ghanaian population, a very large Nigerian population, and we've got a very large Ethiopian population. So we've got large communities in the city of Chicago alone, and people have, for the most part, been able to bring a slice of culture and benefit from it. We have the African Festival of the Arts every year, and I believe the brother who organized that is Liberian, I believe, who I've known for years. And so we get a chance to see a bit of the culture, but we don't always hear the challenges. And because I have a number, I happen to belong to a global Muslim community that also large Nigerian and Ghanaian immigrants here in Chicago in specific. So I've seen a bit of the challenges, and possibly one of the things has to do with there is a distinct difference between the cultures, even though others who are from Europe tend to just kind of group everybody together. But what made you, first of all, tell us a bit about your organization, the United African Organization, and what are some of its goals in terms of perhaps bridging the gap and being able to come to some type of unity?
Thank you for that question. So the United African Organization is a not-for-profit based here in Chicago. It's actually based in the Woodlawn neighborhood. And we are, overarching mission is, of course, to support and empower the Black immigrant and refugee community across the state. And we do that in a few ways. One, we provide direct services. So we have immigration legal services. As you know, the biggest barrier that our community faces is the immigration system itself. So we provide support in that area. And then we have what we call our family support services, which encompasses essentially everything that is not immigration legal related. So supporting families with accessing public benefits, with finding, with healthcare access, with housing and financial assistance, employment, education, and the like. So often, our members walk in with a variety of needs, and we try to support with that, and also have a network of partners in Chicago and across the state that we can also refer participants to. And then lastly, we do public policy advocacy to advocate for policies that empower our community. A lot of it obviously is largely immigration related, but we also address other equity issues that affect both us as Black immigrants, but also affect other disenfranchised communities, particularly our African-American brothers and sisters. So we work in coalition to address things like, the creating a child tax credit so that families who live in poverty can get some support, housing access, language access, and the like. So those are the areas that we work in. But outside of our direct services, we also seek opportunities to build relationships and bridge the gap between those that we serve in our office and then the larger African-American community, the larger Black community. And so this summit is one of those initiatives intended to bridge the gap. So it is our flagship summit. It's an opportunity to bring members of the diaspora together to dialogue and talk about issues that are important to us. Part of that, we have what we call our resource fair, which where we invite a number of our partners to table and provide information on the work that they're doing as well.
You know, one of the things that comes up often when the subject of immigrants is approached, and it really has been a real challenge for the Chicago community. The United States offers so much in terms of social services, financial services, and many times immigrants are able to find advocates for what's needed, language services and so forth. You know, English is a second language kind of services for those who may be coming, and English is not their first language. But there's also an indigenous discriminated against population that has trouble getting access to these services that are seemingly readily made available to those who may have recently arrived. And that creates kind of a conflict. Because the question even was recently asked about the immigrants coming from South America and, you know, being given housing while there's a large homeless population. And many people say, well, where did this money come from? You know, how come you didn't have it for us? So when you arrive, are there organizations, or maybe that's something that your organization does, that finds out what the resources are and gets them to the citizens? And maybe that's something that the indigenous population doesn't have. And people, whether it's their elected officials or whatever, telling them where the resources are, the reason why we don't get it. And some of the people who just came, they get it seems like the red carpet rolled out for them. What are some of the advocates for immigrants that you've worked with and that have helped get people resources?
Yeah, I think you make a good point. But, you know, migration happens in different ways. So speaking about, let's say, the African or the Black immigrant community in Chicago, you know, Africans, for example, started coming as students in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And so, you know, that was the first initial wave of folks coming with the intent to go to school and return, and just, you know, life happened and many stayed. And then you have Black immigrants that come as refugees, right? So when there is crisis in different parts of the world, the United Nations, they have a High Commissioner for Refugees, they designate certain individuals that are displaced due to either climate issues or conflict or persecution. And so they resettle those families. There's a resettlement process for families like that. And Africans are oftentimes the largest benefactors of that program. In the Chicago area over the last several, you know, more recently there's more maybe families from Ukraine and Afghanistan that have been coming over the last couple of years. But prior to that, it's been families from the Congo, for example, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Sudan, Somalia, right, that have been resettled in that manner. There's also family-based migration, which accounts for the large proportion, the largest way in which Black immigrants get to the United States. So it's a family member here that petitions for them to come, or once somebody acquires a immigration status, then they maybe petition for their wives and their children to come. Then more recently, we've seen the influx of families coming across the border too. And and I know that the narrative that we hear is that it's only folks from Latin American countries, but it actually also includes Africans and Haitians that are coming across the border. So, you know, we get asked, like, how do you even make it to trek up to the border from the continent? So people fly somewhere into Latin America, which has less restrictive visa requirements. And then they will trek. So they walk from Brazil, whatever methods that they use, buses, taxis, many times also they're trafficked, right? Somebody is offering them opportunity to be transported for the exchange of money.
Wow.
And so they also are coming, we've seen over the last year and a half, we've seen probably over 1,200 individuals in our offices alone.
Wow.
And about 700 or so just since last July. And so these are families and individuals coming from countries like Angola, the Congo, Cameroon, Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, Guinea.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not often, our numbers are relatively small, but when you still look at the issue, it's still a large number of families. And oftentimes because that's not part of the narrative, they often don't get the resources that they should be receiving.
So
go ahead.
What are some of the reasons that cause a person to flee a country? I mean, I've met a lot of students, so I know, of course, they're here as students, people who have immigrated to, expand their business. They might have a business at home. They want to, have an outlet abroad, so they're expanding a business. So those are people who aren't leaving in distress. But then there are people who leave their country in distress. What are some of the reasons that would cause people to leave and maybe even try to go under the radar and sneak in, so to speak, because of a difficult situation? What are some of the things happening?
Some of it is political persecution.
Mm.
It is individuals that may be engaged in protests or disagreements with the incumbent government in their home country, and therefore, they may get detained. And tortured, and so for their safety, they flee because they no longer feel like it's a safe space. In some cases, in the case of Cameroon, for example, there's been a conflict that has been engulfing the civilian population, while the conflict is really between the government and a separatist movement. Civilians have been caught in between that and pitted against, if they think you're supporting one group or the other side will persecute you.
Wow.
Right? So they've had to flee for their safety. Similarly, Congo, is in a very dire situation. So families are, and Congolese also come as refugees, but we have seen some, maybe like they were outside their country and they can't go back, so they'll decide to come here or fleeing, Congo for the first time.
Wow.
And then sometimes it's economic reason, because people are not able to find employment.
Yeah.
In a lot of the African countries, the population of young people is very large, yet there isn't enough employment, enough work for them to make a living.
Mm.
And when that becomes a struggle, then they will choose to leave. People go in many different directions, right? There's our brothers and sisters that are trying to get into Europe, for example, through North Africa, through Libya or Tunisia. There are brothers and sisters who may migrate to United Arab Emirates or Saudi Arabia or places like that in search of work. And then there are some that also go to Latin America, right? Sometimes they will fly somewhere else seeking opportunity. out, then they'll try to come to the U.S. Many of the Haitians that came in 2021 and 2022 were Haitian families that had left Haiti about 10 years prior to that, 7 to 10 years prior to that, in search of work in Latin America, particularly tied to, I believe, the World Cup or the one of those large games, the Olympics, the World Cup. It's probably World Cup.
Yeah.
So there was opportunities at that time. But then later, particularly with COVID, work wasn't as easy to get. And as a result, they were also facing a lot of racial discrimination and mistreatment. And so they decided, and Haiti, as you know, is not a very safe space. So those families decided to come to the U.S., try to come to the U.S. instead. But I think to your question about accessing resources, yes, it is partly because there are organizations that are set up to do the advocacy work. For example, we are a member of a larger coalition, immigrant coalition called Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, that is a membership-based organization, membership-based coalition of organizations like us who support immigrants. And so particularly across the state, is a very powerful actor in this space. Mm-hmm. Granted, we're underrepresented even in that space. We currently are the only Black-led, Black immigrant-serving organization that is a member of that coalition.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other Black-led organizations that are doing some of this work. There's the Ethiopian Community Association.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Haitian Coalition, and the Haitian Museum more recently have started to engage in this work as we continue to see Haitians and other Black migrants coming across the border.
Yes. Kareem, you had a question?
Yes, I'm aware of what is occurring in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The main news sources are focused on Palestine, not to diminish the horrible atrocities that are happening in Palestine. But I believe there needs to be an equal focus on the largest displacement of human beings inside of one border, and that is occurring in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The warring factions that's putting a lot of death and destruction on the civilian population. We know that the continent of Africa is one of the most resource-rich continents on the earth. My question and my concern is that although there have been the appearance of independence coming to certain African countries, but how much of the economic influence of the colonizers are still within those countries that have gained independence, there's enough resources for everyone, but the exploitation of the continent and the various countries in the continent, I still believe that there is a foreign influence that's on the resources and the economic opportunities that Africa has to share with its citizens and the world. So my position is that those of us that are here in the United States, we with what we've been through, we should be able to identify and sympathize with those that are coming to this country as immigrants. Whether we realize it or not, we have similar experiences. We have a similar history. And I must say, white supremacy is still active. We need to come together and address these issues, you know, and not fight among ourselves. We welcome the inhabitants of the continent of Africa. They bring a rich culture, matter of fact, the countries in Africa are very diverse. They have many different languages, cultures, systems that they're operating under. So when we say Africa, it's not like it's one monolith, but there's much we can gain if we support one another. That's what I'm hoping that the African-American community begin to do, and the African from the continent, that we embrace one another, not stand off from one another, and share similar values that we can share with each other. I pray that we come to that position, because I really don't like the idea of there being an anti-immigrant movement in this country. The only non-immigrants in this country are the indigenous people that were here,
right.
You know.
So, you didn't get here. My book, yeah. Well, you raised the point. We got to take a quick break, but let me come back. I'd like our guest to address some of those things that have to do with, first of all, if Africa is such a rich continent, why are people struggling financially? You know, is there still a very large influence in colonialism? And is that even instigating some of the wars that are still going on? And another point you brought out, even about the ability of African Americans to empathize with the recent immigrants to Africa as part of the global struggle to overthrow and get rid of the whole white supremacist philosophy so that we're not still operating as if we don't have, when in fact you're coming from the continent that's really supplying everybody else's needs. Why are we still poor? You know, it doesn't make sense. So we got to take a quick break, and we'll come back and let our guest, Sister Fasika, answer these questions and more as we look forward to the 2024 Africa Summit and Resources Fair this coming Saturday, May 18th. And that's from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at University Church at 5655 South University Avenue in Chicago. It's right there in the Hyde Park community, Woodlawn community, that whole area. And, of course, you're familiar with it. You know where it is, so come on down. And we'll be right back after this quick break, so stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back with and take your questions and comments, and we've got a caller on the line that's got a serious question to ask about our unity. So we'll be right back. So just stay with us.
I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. And in case you didn't notice the resemblance, we're also three sisters.
We're going to be coming to you every week, sharing our successes and our mistakes as we navigate our lives as moms, wives, sisters, daughters, and of course, black women in today's world.
We'll talk about it all. Race, politics, religion, economics, culture, and we'll take a look at everything from whether or not to use corporal punishment to how do you teach your children about sex. Look for our upcoming book, Growing Up Charles. It's a personal story about our lives growing up in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side. I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
and I'm Naima. We're three black moms. Follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three Black Moms.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
And we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, along with our co-host Kareem Hamid and our American Muslim 360 family. And our guest today is Fasika Alim of the... Of course, they're having a conference this Saturday. The United African Organization... That is 2024 Chicago African Summit and Resource Fair. And we are learning that there are many things that we should know that is influencing
Unmuted.
The continent of Africa and having an impact on those who are choosing to immigrate here to America. And sometimes it's for opportunities and sometimes it's to escape. So, Fasika, you know, there are a lot of things, and Serene pointed out some things that people know, some that we don't hear as much about in the news, the wars, the conflicts. What are some of the challenges for people who leave because the financial situation has been disrupted by perhaps war, maybe even famine or, you know, whatever the case may be, and how responsible are other outside agitators to creating that conflict that's going on in the country?
Yeah, I think, you know, when individuals get to the United States, we tend to face some of the similar challenges within this and racist system. For example, black immigrants are more likely to be detained and deported because of their interaction with law enforcement, because of the disproportional interaction of law enforcement. The fact that increasingly black immigrants are particularly, let's say, in Chicago. You know, Chicago is a very segregated city, but the number of families that, and the assumption is that most immigrants live on the north side of the city. While that is true to some extent, there is also a large proportion of black immigrants who live on the south and west sides of the city. Therefore, the likelihood of interactions with law enforcement are increased because those communities are over-policed. Trend exists around the country as well. So there are, black immigrants are more than three times more likely than any other immigrant group to be deported, detained and deported. When they are detained, they're also more likely to be mistreated in detention. They're six times more likely to be put in solitary confinement. They're more likely to have medical needs withheld. to be forced to sign their own deportation orders. And so these are the similar treatment to what we know is happening to Black and brown people, particularly Black people in this country. In terms of immigration policy also, it's less favorable for Black immigrants. For example, currently for people coming across the border, they have to use an app in order to register themselves in order to ask asylum. However, that app, one, requires you to have a phone, right? Mm-hmm. Internet access.
Yeah, what if you don't have that?
And then add to the fact that it uses facial recognition technology, which we know does not work for our people so well. So these are barriers that are placed in front of them before they even get here. When Haitians were coming, and including now with the state of what Haiti is like, Haitians continue to be barred from seeking asylum and deported from the border.
Mm.
Back to the madness that they're trying to flee. And that happens to other Black immigrants, Cameroonians, for example, who, because of persecution, had to flee, have been deported back, right? And there's documentation to show that when they are sent back, they are... they face continued persecution. They're targeted, in fact. So the system is also stacked unfavorably for Black immigrants. When Donald Trump was in office, he, you know, attempted to end the diversity visa program, which is a program that allows for, where it's a lottery system. You apply and they select a certain number of immigrants around the world, and it's based on quota of how many people from that country are here already. So countries like Nigeria are not eligible. Countries like Jamaica are not eligible.
Wow.
Mexico is not eligible either because they say that the numbers of those individuals.
We have enough of y'all already. Is that what they're saying?
Yes. It's but it allows for migration for a lot of other Africans. And Trump wanted to end that program, and he was not successful. But what has happened since is it's become very difficult from those who win those lotteries from African countries to get the next step of the process done at the embassies in their home country. And immigration is sometimes a very discretionary process. So when you go to apply for a visa, they can tell you, no, we're not taking anybody today. Or the person in front of you may just decide, I don't like you, so I'm going to deny this visa request. It's very discretionary. The same way when you sit in front of an asylum officer here in the United States, when you're coming across the border, they could decide to deny your asylum, even though you have a good case.
Wow.
And so you can imagine how that will not favor Black immigrants well, because the immigration system is, like other systems in this country, is racist, and it's based on the ideologies of white supremacy. And, you know, you asked about what happens on the continent. There are a lot of external actors, right? France, and you know, currently even has its hand in many West African countries. We've seen some change in a few, you know, such as Burkina Faso and Niger, who are working to end that dependency on France, or should I say the dependency of France on those countries, right? Because France has no mines or gold reserves in their country, but they have the most gold, and where are they getting that from? And so to end that relationship, and we're, you know, rooting for them and hoping that this really ignites the continent, right, to push back against those hands. When we talk about the conflict in Congo, there's definitely the hand of the United States in that conflict, because they are arming and supporting those rebels that are creating the issue in Congo. You know, when you look at Sudan, you have the hands of the Arab world in the conflict that is happening. So all over the continent, you know, that is the trend. And then we have ineffective leaders by design. I think, you know, the external forces also support dictatorship and mismanagement for their own benefit. And so that's the pattern. I think that's across the country. We've seen from history what happens to leaders that are really effective in galvanizing the country and making sure that resources are used appropriately, right? We saw Patrice Lumumba and Thomas Sankara and, you know, across, we've seen that everywhere. So, but I think it's, you know, Black people around the world need to wake up. And those of us that are here, I think, can definitely be actors in how our government here engages on the continent.
Well, one question before I go to our phone lines. Is there or are there elected officials that the African immigrant community has relied on to stand up for their rights, to voice their concerns about the racial profiling, the targeting for deportation, you know, making it difficult for people to actually get into the country and become legal citizens, all those things that are often race-based? Is there or are there across the country particular elected officials, congressmen, and so forth that are sensitive to what's happening in Africa and are working in your behalf?
Yes. You know, I mean, we're not, luckily we're not the only organization that is working on this issue. And in fact, there are other Black immigrant-led national organizations that are also engaging legislators. You know, we have organizations like the Black Alliance for Just Immigration. We have the African Communities Together. We have Haitian Bridge Alliance, which are national organizations that do also work with federal level legislators about these issues. You know, since we're a state organization, we work a lot with our representatives from the state. You know, so we've work to engage leaders like Congressman Jackson or Bobby Rush before him, as well as Congressman Dan Davis around these issues, as well as our senators. But we've always looked to our Black leaders to be our voice in those spaces as well. So at the state level, for example, we're connected with the Legislative Black Caucus to talk about these issues at the state level. And they have actually really galvanized to support us, you know, including, you know, they recently created a Black Immigrant Task Force at the state level to study at the state level the needs of Black immigrants across the state. And that was because we had allies, we had supporters within the state legislature that saw that need, you know, heard us and is working towards that goal. So we've been really fortunate to have a number of relationships with Black caucus members at the state as well as at the city, who have been our greatest advocates.
Well, we've got a guest for our second hour that's going to be talking about some of the various actions that have been taken to address racial discrimination and the historic racial discrimination. But I want to bring her in a little early because She has a few concerns about what often comes up as perhaps a schism, a source of division between the long-term residents of African descent who have been here and who came here under duress, and then the recent African immigrants that have a different set of circumstances, even though we're all facing racial injustice. But sometimes we find ourselves on different sides of the political fence based on, you know, what particular elected official may be highlighting and what's needed by that particular immigrant community. And so I guess my question is this upcoming summit going to give us a chance to address some of these old wounds between the old and the new, so to speak? So let me bring in my dear sister, Mama D, Yanubian, to ask some of these global questions when it comes to our relationship as an African people. Welcome to the show, Mama D. Thank you so much for coming on into the conversation.
Well, hallelujah. Greetings. Wayo and Yah Shalom, Grand Rising. As a Crimes Against Humanity descendant voted by the United Nations in August of 2001 and Jim Crow genocide survivor, we're the only arrivals that are not immigrants. Coming, everyone that came over here, whether it was from Poland or Ireland or Haiti or Ghana, they came from a country that had a land and a language, and they came by choice. Being stolen from a continent and held as a movable property thing called chattel for 246 years until 1865, followed by 1866 until May 17, 1954, we were under segregation law. And the Brown versus Board of Education decision said that segregation laws were unconstitutional because they only existed to keep the status of the Negro gap, not black and brown, not people of countries, but to keep the status of the Negro down, and it harmed their children to the extent that they said it is doubtful that they will ever overcome it. America is real good at using the language barrier. Instead of saying the Negro children had received irreparable harm, they said it's doubtful that they'll ever overcome it. So we have had to live for 70 years a complete life span to deal with that doubt. And it was, so I said earlier, Jim Crow genocide survivor, because if you were 6 years old when you get this harm and it's doubtful you'll ever overcome it, it is serious. And if it's serious, the definition of genocide is causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. And as a matter of fact, every single category in the definition of genocide, we have received that as a people. And when you have had 345 years of federal laws against you as a group, it is totally different. And only the American, the indigenous Native American Indians and the indigenous Native American Africans, if you're in the country, when it becomes a country, you are indigenous. 1619 came before 1776. So we are indigenous Native American Africans. And the people living on the continent, Ghana, they do not claim the continent. They claim a country. And it is, we're claiming a whole continent of African Americans. When we are American Africans, as I said, only the indigenous Native American Indians and the indigenous Native American Africans could be born in America and not be citizens in the land of their birth until the 14th Amendment describes citizenship, and we were allowed to be citizens, or you're supposed to be naturalized. And when we are saying we are all, everybody is from African descent. We are the parents of civilization. We are the only ones that can can make love and create one race of people, because black is the most dominant. However, if whites wanted to make one race, they would have to make war and kill up all the blacks, all the browns, all the yellows, all the everybody else. So there are some differences, and you're having a African summit. When we see that, we know you're not talking about African Americans. You're talking about the Africans that came here from a country by choice that had a land and a language, and we are still languishing on the bottom of everybody because we have not, like the Native Americans, American Indians, they have received exempt status, cultural rights, sovereignty, land, and money as a people. We need the same kind of repair. But unfortunately, we are recognition stars, and we want to be just like everybody else and get in with the black and the browns. And no, we have to get in with ourselves. I certainly believe.
Well, that brings up a question that I have. Because, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who have come here recently and asked them, what did they learn about us? Did they know what happened here? And a lot of people don't have any reference to what happened to those who left. You know, I mean, is it taught in school? Is there a theory about who you're going to run into when you run into these long-time absent, you know, African relatives that are living here, like Mama D said? What are they teaching? What did you learn in school about the people living here? Tell us.
Yeah, so I was going to say I can speak for myself. I actually went to school. I did elementary school in Ethiopia and did my high school in Kenya. And what I learned in history class in Kenya was not even about Kenyans, let alone black people across the ocean.
Mm.
Right? They taught us about the Chinese and the French Revolution and the Bolsheviks in Russia and World War One and World War Two. And nothing, I don't recall, not one lesson about black people. And so I would assume, because most of Africa was colonized, that the educational system is largely like that. Mm. And now I could be wrong. Maybe there's a caller who knows different, right? But that was my experience. I did not learn anything. However, in my household, I had a father who wanted us to learn things. He himself had the opportunity to go to England for schooling and experienced racism, And so when he had children, he wasn't very overt about it, but you know, my biggest, most profound memory is when we got a VHS player in 1987. and the first tape he put Thriller. but the second tape he put in there was Roots. And it changed our life. And so,
you know,
Wow. Yeah, Kareem, you were going to say,
you know,
take a break.
Yes, ma'am. You know, we have to reconcile with history. It's not as if the African American that was an item in chattel slavery that is unique. The whole continent of, how do we think gold got to Great Britain? Who mined that gold? And under what conditions? It was under the condition of slavery, the Haitian is an excellent example of the lingering distaste for African. Haiti represents the first country, the first area where there was a successful slave revolt headed by Toussaint Louverture. And they were able to run the French from out of France. But at the same time, France assembled an armada of gunships and surrounded Haiti and threatened them with death if they did not agree to pay reparations to those that had enslaved them. Right now, Haiti is paying huge sums for that so-called court case that was held between France and Haiti. We mentioned the Democratic Republic of Congo. If I'm not mistaken, that's the only place on earth where cobalt is mined. And cobalt is the necessary mineral that activates our computer systems and high tech. But they are using slave labor, little children, digging in the earth with their hands to get that. So we cannot separate slavery. I mean, you know, the African slave condition, the only difference between the form of slavery that was in Africa, especially study King Leopold of Belgium, the cutting off of limbs, the massive takeover of life. They enslaved the majority of those countries that are in existence now. They were under slavery also. So I hope that we, as African, as descendants of the continent of Africa, that we can at least join on that basis of wanting liberation and independence and self-determination. But I recognize we have corrupt leaders in those countries that are usually bought off and paid to allow the foreigner to continue have access to the resources of the continent of Africa. I pray that we can come to some kind of uniformed position concerning that. We are exploited here, whether we realize it or not. We are still being exploited. So it's my prayer that as African people, that we can look at our circumstances and we see we're all in the same boat, come from the same set of circumstances, and not look askance at each other and cause competition. Well, they are giving them such and such a thing, but they are not giving us. Well, that is a divide and conquer formula. Let us not fall prey to that. So at this meeting, I hope that some of these things can be addressed, that how can we move forward as a whole people to establish for us an independent self-determination. I pray that we don't fall into like schisms. It used to puzzle me. How come this African country is fighting that African country? Well, there is a hidden hand behind that. And that hidden hand usually comes from out of Europe. I'll stop right there, my sister. Thank you.
And you know, that's the thing that I'd like us to talk about. I know I said the first hour. Can you stay with us for a few more minutes, maybe for the next 30 minutes? Because, you know, we really got to get to the meat of things. And I'd like to find out what are some of the things that are going to be discussed at this conference, and what do you hope to come out of it based on all of this that we still have to figure out? And how do we empower ourselves to change the situation without expecting somebody else to do something other than ourselves to make a change? So we'll talk about that when we come back. Hold on, Mama D, because we're going to come right back and deal with this education issue, because, you know, Fasika, you brought up a major thing, which we still deal with, which is our miseducation, the reason why our perspective is skewered. So we'll be right back after this quick break, and we want you all to stick and stay. Don't stray away. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. You can connect with us on Blog Talk or 515-605-9891. You can connect with us on the other Blog Talk channel on AM360, or you can call us on the on-air radio network at 727-731-5192. That's 727-731-5192. We want to hear from you. So we'll be right back after this quick break. So just stay with us.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif. And if you're watching this, that means you're one of the 4.6 billion people from around the world who are using an electronic device to talk to you. In these times, people are using the Internet to talk to you. Friends, neighbors, family members, co-workers. People are on their cell phones and computers all day long. Now, if you're in business, that is great. That means you can sell your products all day long and never have to leave your home. All you need is a meeting. Somebody to connect you to an audience. Fine talking to you. We produce quotes. Our audience members are people to shop. They buy clothes, food, beauty supplies, cleaning supplies, home repair, transportation service, child care service. Whatever you're selling, they need to buy. Hear your needs. And tomorrow, you can sit back and relax and hope while your business can make some money.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives.
Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, along with our co-host, Kareem Hamid, and our American 360 family. And we've got with us today's Fasika Halim, who is with the United African Organization. And they are coming up that if you're in and around the Chicagoland area, you need to try to attend. We're all about unity, and we are hoping that you can lend your voice to the 2024 Africa Summit and Resource Fair, which again, this Saturday, May 18th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at University Church at 5655 South University Avenue in Chicago. And we really do hope that all of those who identify themselves as of African descent, even if they've been in the country for many generations, can come on down and address our common challenges. So I have a question, Fasika, that I think both Kareem and Mama D brought up when it comes to how we have to address the racial injustice, and yet we have the power to stop fighting wherever we are. And I believe we can't keep blaming people for condition that we initially created with our own disunity in the first place. If there's ever a lesson that a people should have learned, is that you can't fight and win. So other people might exacerbate our differences, but we truly have the power to choose to stop the violence.
Unmuted.
And choose to stop being manipulated. And we have the power to choose to create everything from our own currency, which is what Mark Gaddafi was working on, but that's another show altogether. But we have the power to refuse to be controlled by outside forces if we simply join together and with a united purpose of healing the land without cruel slave child labor, without sex trafficking, which is also a horrendous thing happening. And all of these things that it takes a corrupt spirit to keep doing, and we can't just blame Europeans because they couldn't have had access to the continent unless we gave it to them. So how do we take responsibility for the mess that we made with our infighting, whether it be because we're recent immigrants against long-term residents or people from different countries fighting each other? How do we take responsibility for creating a unity without... White people is not doing this, and white people is not doing that. Let's ignore what do we need. What is this conference going to do to help us?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I don't know if you can see me. My camera, you can see me? Okay.
Yes, we can see you.
Okay, it's just black on my end. But you know, thank you for the question. And I think with this summit really intends to do is bring people together, right, to have these conversations. It's not easy to work together if you're not in relationship with each other, right? Even when we think about organizing and public policy work, the core part of that is the relationship building component. And we're hoping that this summit can do some of that. And so the summit is designed similar to, we have panel discussions. We will have three panel discussions. The first, obviously, because immigration is such a large component of the challenges within the community, that has always been a discussion within the summit, but we've also tried to make a point to include other topics that can be uniting or unifying for the diaspora. And so our morning panel would be talking about what it's like to be an immigrant or African within the diaspora and some of the challenges that presents. We have actually a short documentary from a brother from Benin who, when he arrived in the United States, was detained in immigration detention for several months. And so he'll speak to what that experience was like and has a short documentary to share with us. So that the morning component provides kind of a view of what it's like to operate within the immigration system, with immigration as, you know, in the backdrop. Our afternoon sessions tackle two conversations that I think can be unifying. The first is about faith and community in the diaspora. So we are, you know, the panelists will explore how their faith background, their religion, their faith traditions shape their experiences and influences their understanding of their purpose in the community and what they do to you know, affect change in the community work that they do, how faith informs that work. So we have a speaker representing the Christian faith, we have a speaker representing Islam, and then we have somebody representing those that may practice traditional African beliefs, such as the Ifa from Nigeria, for example. So we'll have those perspectives as part of that. And then our other panel in the afternoon, which runs concurrently to the one on faith and community, is women, talking about women in the diaspora and how their experiences within the diaspora also influence their understandings of their identity and purpose, and really looking at women as political, economic, cultural, and religious leaders. And so similarly, you know, this I think is a conversation that can engage the whole diaspora, regardless of where you're coming from and how long you've been here. You know, and that panel actually also includes someone who will speak from the Afro-Latino perspective. We have an Afro-Colombian who also happens to have, has created the African Diaspora Museum. And so we have a few women that we have identified to have that conversation. And the goal is to also engage the audience, right? That the conversation among panel members really is inclusive of the audience and really inviting the audience to participate. So even if you are not on the panel, that your voice also matters in that conversation. So we invite everybody to come and really engage with us in those conversations. And, you know, this is an annual event. Through these relationships and the partnerships that we are developing, we can also broaden the conversation and also, you know, create space and time for the difficult conversations, right, in this and upcoming.
It sounds like it's going to be quite comprehensive, and I think one of the challenges that we face is that after we've presented the thing, how do we get to a point of solution? And I think we've got, let me see if I can. Bring back, I want to make sure that I mute the mics if anybody's not speaking. First of all, let me ask, do you have any callers on your switchboard, Kareem?
No, not at this time, but I invite I invite those that are on the AM360 board to press one on your phone. I will unmute your mic. Okay, we have a caller at this time. I'm going to open up the mic of 727-741. Martha Naila Abdullah, the Executive Director of the Community-Wide Shura Conference. Assalamu alaikum, Martha.
Alaikum assalam, and greetings of peace to everyone as I start with seeking refuge with Almighty God from the devilish mentality that can arise at any given moment to divide, and thankful that we're connecting through the words we're using this morning to show the gratefulness and it's not simplicity, not a simple matter, but I'm grateful to be on this morning and to be a part of this life and truly wanting to understand as Naima, you mentioned solution, and we all will have our own way of coming forth through understanding and our ignorance. I want to put that there because there's a lot of ignorance from my part. But I want to ask the question, as there are many organizations here in the United States and we are forever burdened with the barriers and the complications of this life and then the history, I do believe as one possible solution is when we – as we need to connect, and thankful for this part, can we open the doorway to the level of what has separated us? And I'm coming from as an organization, community-wide Shura Conference is open to always having open communication, and then getting into those areas that we need to work on to reach solutions, and this particular one I'm speaking about is we've adopted as an initiative faith and family, and I was wonderful, happy to hear the expression you just shared, the information you just shared. I apologize the name, it didn't come clearly to me, Naima, to our guest,
Masika
and to Mama
is our guest. And okay. You know, you've raised okay. Some good points, Sister Martha,
yes.
Especially when it comes to having a solution in mind. And I know that they'll have, you know, diverse groups, diverse religious groups, things like that. But let me she's of course presented several things that will probably be on the agenda. What do you foresee, particularly when it comes to the family thing? Because that tends to be where everything begins and ends. There are a lot of things that have happened on a very personal level. This one out here. You have a lot of people that have come here wanting citizenship, and men who have married women who are citizens and then left them or you know, got them pregnant and left them, whatever. And unfortunately, that's the sore spot that the two communities have when it comes to how are we going to build trust. Is that the kind of discussion that can be had at this conference?
And on, I'm supposed to be a guest on the.
I think there are definitely opportunities for those types of conversations. For sure. Yes. And I think the conversations that these panels will have can also address family issues or challenges within those contexts. You know, as I also mentioned earlier, building these relationships enables us to plan to have those conversations, right? That is recognizing that, yes, these are sore spots we want to address, and how do we create space for those conversations? I definitely agree that we need to do healing work in our community also, like these restorative conversations. And so this is part of, you know, the goal of the summit, but also our a part of our interest as an organization. We were always intentionally had our office, for example, on the south side of the city because part of our interest was building the relationship across the diaspora. So, yes, these conversations can be had at summit.
Yeah, and I think that's an issue that comes up when it comes to the interaction. Another one, and there was actually one of the kings of in Nigeria came here, I think it was 2 years ago, and he gave an address at the Rainbow Push National Headquarters with Reverend Jackson and so forth, and he made a statement that he apologized for the role of his nation in the slave trade, because that's still a sore spot. And this is what I mean when I say we have to take responsibility for our role in creating this mess that we're in, the fighting that led to others being able to take prisoners of war and exploit them and then create a whole international business out of it. It wouldn't have been possible if we hadn't been fighting in the first place. And there are families that got wealthy off of selling other people, the slave trade, just like there are European families that descent who are wealthy from the slave business. So we're still in pain over that. And there's an attitude sometimes of recent immigrants that they look down on those who have been here, who've gone through the struggle, some of the things that Mama D mentioned, you know, the trauma that we've endured over time in this place and how we've had to fight to make it possible for other black immigrants to come here and be respected. And yet there's still that pain because we haven't addressed the unfinished business of how did we get over here in the first place and the betrayal, and can we heal from that hurt? Can we admit that there was some wrongdoing, and can we stop blaming Europeans when in fact we started it among ourselves with the fighting? Can we take responsibility so that we can then take power back and make the changes within ourselves when it comes to how we treat ourselves? What are your thoughts on that?
I think the biggest challenge there is that people are not aware of history.
Mm.
Right? So we have to somewhat prepare people for these conversations by providing context and understanding history, right? You know, what it's also not just fueled by a lack of knowledge in that area, but it's also fueled by miseducation, as we talked about earlier, right? When the images that we receive on the continent of our brothers and sisters here is oftentimes a negative image. And therefore we arrived with these preconceived ideas of who a people are when we know nothing about the history of a people, much less our own history. And so, you know, trying to find those opportunities to educate. And you know, we hope that the summit does that, because when you're in relationship, you can also have those conversations where you're teaching each other about each other. And so our goal is to foster the environment that allows us to do that in order to have those very difficult conversations.
Yes, definitely. And I think that it's good that this summit is coming when it is. This is a time for us to really examine the power that we have with a global system of communication. We can talk directly to each other now. So there's no excuse for us not knowing or not listening to each other and not trying to understand each other's situation. And I think we who have been here are not as we need to be to those who are just arriving. And we need to talk about what are our common problems, and then what are the situations that we are creating among ourselves that we are responsible for creating. Everything from the, like Kareem mentioned, the corruption that happens, you know, whether it's a scam, on the internet and how many people have gotten the letter from the so-called Nigerian king that's saying, I just need your access to, I need to transfer a bunch of money, and if you just give me access to your bank account, then I'll give you a piece of it. I mean, how many people, everybody's had that scam letter. I mean, why are we doing that to each other? You know, but people are people, and yet it creates the distrust. And then things that you hear, I mean, if I heard constant, if I was seeing constant images of drug dealers, jail, killings, I'd be afraid of African Americans also, because how do you know what's true and what's exaggeration? How do we have more of these kinds of discussions where we can talk to each other and tell the history? There's a lot of people that know that there was war going on in various nations that Kareem mentioned. They had no clue because we don't hear it. How do we share information on a regular basis? Is there a way we can do that so that we can keep each other abreast and informed and keep on developing solutions?
Yes, good point. I think shows like yours go a long way in facilitating those conversations. But there are also parallel shows within the African community. One comes to mind, it's called the Progressive Mind Show. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's a young brother from Ghana who really has been doing a lot of work to bring communities together to have conversations that highlight our, you know, our commonalities, but also conversations that we want to discuss where we differ on things or where we may have issues that we want to address in different things. So I think these types of platforms are very important in the community, and so it's important to do our part to expand the reach of platforms like this. But we could also create, you know, take opportunities to meet people where they are and do these type of events. So we would appreciate, you know, if to know about other similar events to the summit where we can bring our community, where we can attend, and similarly a way for us to share the things that we're doing in our community so that, you know, African Americans can join us in the different things that we do. I think even in the work that we do, a partnership is very empowering, and I think there's opportunity to unite on so many fronts to really address the disenfranchisement that we see across our communities. And so I'm hopeful that this is a start to, you know, continuing to have or to make time and space for these conversations.
Yes, I agree. I think we can continue to do this, and we're going to check and see if Mama D is back with. And Mama D, before we go to break, have any last questions for our guests?
Well, first of all, I thought I was supposed to be a guest.
Yes, I didn't know if you were in the travel. So
I thought you asked me to be a guest from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m., and then you asked me, could I wait to be a guest starting at 8, because you wanted to bring in this portion of the program. So now I want to know, am I a caller or a guest? Because the Brown versus Board of Education decision is our history, and our history should be important. 70 years.
So before she leaves,
to deal with the doubt.
Well, before she leaves, and before you give us that information, I wanted to see if you had anything left to say to her before she leaves.
Well, I believe. See, when we have in laws being passed to put us down, and this is what the Brown versus Board of Education ruled, to keep the stat 88 years of keeping the status of the Negro down, keeping us in a caste system. I think I attended the last African summit, if that was the one that was held at the Harris Y.
I remember hearing about that. And I heard about that one.
I attended that one. But what I wanted to say was bilingual preferred programs, for instance, American English is our mother tongue language. And we're the only ones over here being told, well, you learn somebody else's language. When the 14th Amendment says, if you're not born in America, you must be naturalized. That requires you to read, write, and speak English. But all of these laws being passed, that they are further disadvantaging us, because the only language we have and the only country we have is the one that was forced upon us. And so when I'm hearing about the immigrants are doing something, if all these countries and all the immigrants are doing something, but the American African is not included in that international immigration group. And Barbara Jordan, she chaired the immigration reform committee, and she said that immigration would harm us as a people because we would be competing for the same job. Professor Anderson has also said how we are being harmed, and it's not anything personal against a group, but the immigrants, the immigrants that come to this country by choice, they are with a whole family of all the other immigrants that are coming here from all over the world. And we are further being disadvantaged. Now, we have a 70-year anniversary coming up, the Brown versus Board of Education decision, where those six-year-old children are now 76-year-old senior citizens, and it's taken us 70 years to deal with that doubt. Our history is important. When it came to the 400th year of our arrival here, they didn't even mention it on TV as a news byline, didn't say a word about it. And this is the way we are treated because of the, as Marcus Garvey said, others can take the chains off your body, but only you yourself can take them off your brain. And we have not overcome 346 years of federal laws against us as a kidnapped race of people in 70 years, haven't overcome it. And we have to be honest with each other. We need to integrate the African Americans and the American Africans. If you come from the continent and you know the land, the language, and something about it, you're an African American. But we are American Africans, and we definitely need to integrate with each other. But first, we have got to integrate with ourselves, and that has not happened.
Well, I think that's probably something that will be addressed at this conference. I don't know if it was addressed at the last one, but definitely those are issues that we're hoping that all groups can talk about. And I think the language issue, now I know there, most people, pretty much everybody who comes to America, they come with their mother tongue, and sometimes English or French might be the national language. But I think when it comes to our education, we do ourselves a disservice if we, as American-born people, only know one language. I just think that the brain works better when we are multilingual, but I know that that is an immigrant issue when it comes to having access to education in your language. And if you don't, then having your child mislabeled as educationally mentally handicapped or something. But Bamazi, we're going to get more into that history and the anniversary. We're going to take one last break, and I'll give our guests I see a chance to say the last word before she leaves us.
Well, let me just say, look, our history is important. Now, I was supposed to be your guest. I believe.
Well, hold that thought. You're coming back.
Fairness,
we're coming back after
but,
the break. You can give us more details, Mama D. We're coming back after the break. Because I'm gonna let our guest go because
she stayed
longer than I originally said. So
she
just hold that thought.
The whole 2 hours, and our history is not important, and this is one of our major problems. We disrespect our history and what we are about. We've got a very important history day coming up.
Mama D, I'm trying to give you a chance to talk about it, but I need to take a pause for a minute. So pause, please, so we can come back to you so you can give us the details
on it. Well, the other guest
hold that
had
thought,
an
Mama
hour
D.
and
hold
a half.
So now I have on the screen here the 2024 African Summit Resource Fair, and there's a QR code on the screen. Is there a cost for this event, or people just need to register?
Yes, there's no cost at all, and we will be providing lunch. So we ask that people register just so that we have a count on how many people we're expecting.
Okay. All right. Well, if you're watching and the QR code is on the screen, you can just point your camera to that and register. And I hope to be there. And I hope that we'll address all of these things. And even, and I hope you're there too, Mama D, to share the history and also share the struggles and the triumphs and for us to heal the hurt that caused us to end up in this situation in the first place. So I do want to say thank you for being with us this morning and extending your time with us to give us some more insight. Again, that is this coming Saturday, and that is, of course, May 18th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and that is at the University Church, is located right there in the Hyde Park community at 5655 South University Avenue in Chicago. And if you're in and around the Chicagoland area, we hope you can be there, and we hope you can lend your voice to create some solutions. So thank you so much, Fasika Alem, and we look forward to having you back.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you and look forward to being back.
All right.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too. Thank you so much for all
have a good
you
day,
do.
Sir.
Thank
yes.
you.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much, Brother Kareem, for hanging on. And Mama D, you hold tight. We're going to be back after this break.
And if you're watching this, that means you're one of the 4.6 billion people from around the world who are using an electronic device to talk to people. In these times, people are using the internet to talk to everybody. Friends, neighbors, family members, coworkers. People are on their cell phones and computers all day long. Now, if you're in business, that is greatness. That means you can sell your products and services all day long and never have to leave your home. All you need is a media center. Somebody to connect you to an audience. And that's what I'm talking to you today. We produce programs, and our audience members are people who shop. They buy clothes, food, beauty supplies, cleaning supplies, home repairs, transportation services, child care services, whatever you're selling, they need to buy. We're your media connection. Just follow this link, and tomorrow you can sit back and relax at home while your business is making you money.
And we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV show.
I'm Naeem Latif, along with our co-host, Kareem Hameed, and our second half guest, Mama D, who we brought on a little early because she had some points that I think our first half guest needed to hear and discuss, because there's some intensity that we feel as those born in America and having fought the fight to ensure that other people who look like us and come from our native land, whatever country it is, get respect. We paid the price for that. So Mama D, and I know we've got some callers who want to chime in on this issue as well, but tell us about this anniversary coming up and what it means for those who lived through those times when, in fact, they had to integrate the schools and the trauma that they endured. What do we learning from that, and what do we hope to see happen going forward?
Well, first of all, we're March, May 17th, we'll kick off a year of initiatives dealing with the what the Supreme Court calls hard and mind and allied and subjugated race damage. And it was 88 years of that. They went right from 1865, the end of enslavement with the 13th Amendment, and rolled right on to 1866 to 1954, 88 years of federal
Unmuted.
Law against us as a group of people. And we're kicking off these initiatives because we want to make history makers of our children. It begins with our students will be interviewing the seniors. The impacted group is age 76 to age 84. If you're 6 years old, the six-year-old children are now 76-year-old senior citizens, and having lived their full life of 70 years, we can finally deal with that doubt and that it was genocide because it caused serious mental harm to Negro children. Not everybody, not black and brown. And when they say people of color, everybody has a color, including the color of snow, which is white. So what we're doing is we're kicking it off a whole year to deal with these issues because we want to repeat the Dahl test and the significance of it. And in addition to that, we want the children, the students, to get Mamie Till Mobley together with Emmett Till on a United States postage stamp, along with the four girls age 11 to 14 that was bombed in the Birmingham church, to get them a United States postage stamp so that our children will make history. In addition to that, we want the Days of Respect that culture that visually affirms the three key principles of the American Civil Rights Renaissance of the 1960s on all, from the survivor standpoint, on all American school calendars. Just like St. Patrick's Day is not a holiday, but it's on the school calendar. We want these visually affirmed Days of Respect that deals with the three key principles of what is called the movement. That 11 years from 1964 to 1965 of marching, picketing, boycotting, protesting, having our children lynched in barns and blown up in churches to get back to where we were in 1865 when we had senators and congressmen. And now in 1965, 100 years later, we didn't even have the right to vote because of terrorism of the Ku Klux Klan and federal laws against us as a race of people, when the Brown versus Board of Education decision says in writing, it segregation laws only exist to keep the status of the Negro down. And that status is still down today. And because we don't have the language straight. Last August, Governor J.B. gave the Arab Americans a uniform racial classification. They are now known and will be counted on the census as Middle Eastern or North African. So we need our own uniformity racial classification category as NAA, Indigenous Native American African. If you're here when the country gets here, we've got to get the language straight.
Mama D, let me ask you this question. For those people who, I guess, you know, when our families get fractured, we don't always know how, we can't always trace back how far. So, and we know recent immigrants, they maybe two generations they've been here at the most. But how far back, how many generations back would a person need to be able to verify their ancestry in order to claim that indigenous Native African
Americans? Indigenous Native American Africans.
Indigenous Native American Africans.
No, if your name is Smith, there was no Smith on the continent of Africa. Your name is Jones and Robinson.
They might be,
so what I'm saying is you were given the name of your slave owner, and your name is still Smith if your slave owner in the 1860s or the 1690s or whatever, America only has enslavement from 1776 to starting at 1776 is when America got started. So we can't claim reparations from 1619 when it comes to reparations. It's only 80, America kept it going, chattel, movable property thing going for 89 years. And then from 1866 to 1954, they put us under segregation laws. And when people come over here, they say, well, you all have been here all these many years. Why haven't you made any progress? Because they don't comprehend the laws that have been against us, 345 years of federal laws against us as a racial group, when 246 of those years, we weren't even a human being. We have not overcome that. And we need to come out of denial, not blaming, and realize the impact of that. They're just talking about the shame of Chicago and the shame of America. They had this series on talking about how they deprived us of owning property by putting in the law. You couldn't sell to a Negro. The first thing that they kept against us was our language barrier. Oh, he's very articulate. This is what you heard in the 60s. During the part of our struggle was, oh, they're very articulate. Nobody ever sit us down and taught us the English language. We grabbed the words here and there and kept it moving. And they kept it against us if you wasn't very articulate. Joe Louis, I glad I win. We laugh at Ebonics, but that's all we had.
Mama, you got a caller to chime in on this. You presented a thought. We're going to designate ourselves specifically because of our long-term history here. Let's hear what area code 312-200. You're live on the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your thoughts about this topic.
This is Rashid Ali calling from Chicago.
I just want to give
greetings to everyone, especially Mama D. Mama D, if it's okay, I would like to talk to you. I don't have your number about a pertinent issue that I think you can help with.
773
my thought on this is...
Yeah, I'll text it to you, Rashida, so you have it in your phone. I'll text it to you.
Thank you, very kindly. Is that all the counsel of God is needed, and because it's really something that's purging in our community, and it appears that we are the ones that are being injured, you know, African-American, so-called African-American, is the one being injured again. For example, this is my thought on it. Most of the migrants are being sheltered, while American homeless have been homeless, sleeping on the ground and anywhere they could. And the migrants are now all over, scattered all over tiny houses. Outside the police station, they were put inside instead of sleeping on the concrete or outside the police door as homeless did prior to them coming here. So in my opinion, we are the ones that are mostly enslaved. I went to Jewel, migrants working, no African-Americans working, because right now they have a new trade. The migrants are bringing the drugs over and have been doing it for a number of years. It was shown on Channel 11 where they grow it and package it and put it on the plane and bring it to Chicago. So the unemployed, impoverished black man and woman are captured by the drug trade, and so they don't want to work. With the jewels, person couldn't even speak English, and they're working. People don't want McDonald's jobs and stuff, especially now since the migrants are being prioritized in housing. They're being prioritized in employment. They're being prioritized in all types of accommodations where Americans have been homeless in America for a long time. And the African American, in my opinion, is still back into enslavement. So we're going to have to start focusing. I think that we're going to have to start focusing on our God-given rights and do for ourselves and our community and stop these hate crimes as are among us, because other people, their countries, although they are all of the countries, are giving our countries money to house and to shelter them. And our mayor today is talking about bringing the migrants over to the south side and putting them into the abandoned houses and facilities that's on the south side. Well, you got senior women that's in the homeless shelter, Americans that's been there. So it's our fault. We can't point the finger at
it. Definitely is. It's definitely a problem for those who have to weather the storm outside and can't get access to resources. You brought up a valid point. We've got to go, but I certainly hope that both of you all attend the African Summit and voice some of these issues that have to do with the resources going to others, and can we all make sure we get our share. And we want to make sure they know about the Board of Education meeting. And when is that? In the seconds we have left, Ramadi, for those who want to voice their opinion about the days of respect.
It's Thursday. Board of Education meets on Thursday. I think you can probably get it on the Board of Education station. But as I said, we'll be kicking off year to deal with our history and our young people and get our house in order. Not in fear of that.
Well, all right. We thank you so much. We're out of time. Thank you so much. Thank you, Brother Kareem, and our American Muslim 360 family. Thank you to our guests. Thank you, thanks for an interesting discussion. Well, we once again have heard some intense conversation. Let us work toward the solution, which is a united decision.
to create the world we want to see. It's in our power. It's in our hands. Let's make it happen. Thank you so much, Brother Kareem. We appreciate you and all of our listeners on American Muslim 360 Family. And thanks to all of you who are watching and listening. Join us tomorrow for another exciting episode of Nature Based Talk with Angela.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
And until that time, continue to shine your light.
We've come to the end of our show today. If you missed any broadcast, go to our website for the audio and video archives at www.thefemalesolution.com. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family joining us from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, xie xie. India, danyabai. Japan, arigato. Korea, kamsahamnida. Russia, spasiba. Germany, danke. Poland, dziękuję. France, merci. Spain, gracias. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, madras. Nigeria, Essex. South Africa, diabonga. Senegal, yaren. Kenya, asante. Israel, toda. Pakistan, shukriya. Afghanistan, ashakur. Saudi Arabia and Palestine, shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you, and may peace be upon you, and the mercy of God and God's.